This week's podcast brought to you by Separation Seats.
You did the WNBA draft on Monday night, as we record this on Thursday, and our two oldest daughters accompanied you to the draft in Brooklyn and got to meet and take pictures with some of the draftees, and were around the draftees and their families. And at the end of the night, when everybody had a great time and you were all departing through some theater doors or something, one of the draftees' mothers said to our 6'3 daughter, "Congratulations on being drafted."
Saying says no pain, no gain, and we found that to be fact. The road might twist and turn a bit, but we all arrive intact. Mr. Mom and Mrs. Dad having each other's back. Day by day, just to keep it sane, who's the ball and who's the chain? It's hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane.
We always do a test just to make sure that the audio and stuff is working. And in the test this morning, you said we haven't done a podcast in how long?
I said 100 years.
100 years. Well, I was just looking. It's been a month, and which is, I think, the longest we've ever gone without doing a podcast. And not the whole thing, but I was trying to listen as much as I could to the last podcast just to remember where we were in life a month ago. And just to catch you up, I had recently been to Vegas for the Pac-12 championship. Rose had the surgery on her shoulder. Her collarbone was about a month out from that. We taped it the day before going to watch our daughter's state championship basketball game. So anyway,
who won?
A lot of things have happened in life just since we did our last podcast.
Well, our daughter's team won the state championship.
Our daughter's team won the state championship. And unlike the previous year where they also won the championship, where they had this massive third quarter outburst and the fourth quarter was not really ever in doubt, this year it was a 2-point game with like 30 seconds to go in the game. So certainly a nerve-wracking game. Do you want to talk about the asking my father to move down a seat at the state championship?
Well, the state championship games are at the Mohegan Sun Arena, 10,000 seats. Is that right?
Yes.
10,000 seats. And, you know, 8,000 of them are,
something like that, whatever.
Well, 8,000 of them are empty.
Yes.
They've got a good crowd.
Actually, there's a great crowd. Like, much of the lower bowl was full. But
absolutely.
Yes, to the point of your story, yes.
Half the seats are empty.
Yes.
Entire sections and rows are empty. So when we're sitting at the game, and understandably, a lot of people that we don't see throughout the year are at the game. It's great that they come out and support, but you know, you don't want to be socializing with them right as the ball is tipped. That's when it's time to.
That's fair. That's when it's time to focus and watch the game.
So anyway, all of our friends and family are in our long row, and your dad came and sat. You were on the aisle. I was on the second seat. Your dad came and sat in the seat next to me. And as he might do on an airplane, lifted the armrest and then just manspread into my seat, which I didn't particularly care for.
Okay. And people should understand, too, especially like when we watch our kids play, like especially in a state championship game, you and I are nervous for them, and it's not like we're a relaxed, hello there selves. We are like a nervous sort of ball of energy. Yes. So my dad's man spreading into your seat.
Not a ball of energy, a ball of rage. It's a barely compressed, suppressed rage. So he's man spreading in my seat, and at one point, and I held it in for a long time, but at some point I said to him, "Would you mind moving down?"
And you kind of had that tone, but louder. It wasn't like, "Hey, would you mind moving down, buddy?" It was much more like how you just said it.
There are two adjacent seats.
Yes.
And two human beings in those seats.
Yes.
I have half a seat, and he has 1.5 seats.
Right. And people should understand, my dad's like not this massive guy. He was just spreading into your seat.
He's not a massive guy?
No.
Okay. Okay, let's go with that. And so he
I mean, he's
at
a
me.
Big guy, but he's not a massive guy. Like, he
he's
can
a, he's
he
a guy
can
you want to be sharing
his own seat.
An unarmrested seat with?
But he, no, but I'm just saying he could fit in his own seat. It's not like he had to have half of your seat. That's my point. Anyway, keep going.
Why lift the armrest?
What?
Why lift the
just armrest? Because it's more comfortable. Anyway, just go.
So I asked them to move down, which required everybody in the row, obviously, to get up and move down a seat.
And everybody and you said it in a sort of terse way.
Like, it was in the middle
can
of
you a, please move down a seat or
it was
something
in the
like
middle
that.
Of our daughter's close state championship
yes,
game.
Yes, it was.
So everybody got up and moved down a seat. And then
in the whole row. What would you say? It was 10 people?
At least.
Yeah.
Maybe it knocked somebody at the end of that long row into the aisle. I have no idea. All I know is that there were 5,000 empty seats to sit in, and yet I had half a seat.
Yes.
I didn't even know we were going to talk about this today, but as I'm recalling it, it's getting me more
agitated.
So everybody moved down, including your dad. Now there is a seat between us.
Right.
As there ought to be.
Right.
And he looks at me and says, well, aren't you, I guess I must have been wearing a coat. He said, aren't you going to put your coat in the seat? And I said, no. And he said, well, then why did everybody have to move down a seat? And I said something like, because I didn't enjoy sharing my seat with you.
And my dad's a good sport, so what did he do when you said that?
He emitted his trademark high-pitched laugh.
We were retelling this story.
But why wouldn't he want this separation seat?
Well, the separation seat. We were retelling this story at Easter in my father's presence and my brother and sister's presence. They were also at the game, and everyone was getting a good laugh out of it. But you know what? You should be allowed, if you want to purchase a separation seat.
Well, of course, you are allowed, and you can.
Can you,
Thomas?
I don't know that. Can you on airplanes purchase a separation seat? I think
of course
you have.
People purchase seats for their stand up upright bases.
But I think you have to put in like a name. I'd be interested to know, like if Delta Airlines on their app or on their website, if they added the option to buy a separation seat. If that's something that would sell well.
Our son and I went to the Red Sox game on Saturday, Red Sox Angels game, and we were in a short row of just four seats. Fenway has some weird configuration things, and we had two seats on the aisle. The third and fourth seats were up against a railing, and nobody sat in the other two seats. And it was a cold day in April, but it was amazing. So our son sat on the aisle. Then there was a separation seat between us. Then I sat in the third seat. And then there was a separation seat between the railing and me. And it is a luxury.
For sure. And our daughter, we took her to the doctor a week ago, got x-rays on her shoulder, and it is healed. And she was cleared to play sports. As he pointed out, it's great to be a kid because if she was an adult and this had happened, she would need probably 2 to 3 more months before the bone would have completely healed and she'd be able to play.
This for people who have long since forgotten. She broke her left clavicle.
Yes, yes.
I'm
sorry.
To repair it.
It seems so fresh to me since I listened to our previous podcast this morning. But yes, broke her left clavicle, had to have surgery. And so now she's like been cleared to play a couple months earlier than an adult would. And even the doctor said that. He's like, the human body is just amazing. Showed us the x-ray and how things had healed. And she had a basketball practice last night.
I didn't realize we had left listeners with so many cliffhangers.
I know, so many. In the last podcast, I did not yet know if I was going to be at the Portland Regional or the Albany Regional. And
which one did you end up at? city can you no longer return to?
Which city did I offend? I ended up in the Albany Regional, and we had an incredible array of teams there. LSU and Iowa ended up meeting in the regional final prior to that.
I know because I went.
Yes. Oh, that's right. You saw the day where Iowa played Colorado. and LSU UCLA. Played UCLA. And then we also did the regional final, which was Oregon State versus South Carolina. And then this record-setting epic Final Four, which was LSU and UConn playing in one national semifinal.
Well, the Iowa.
I'm sorry, Iowa. UConn,
I'm sorry. Yeah. The region final was a record setter.
Yeah,
as
the
well.
Regional final was outrated our national championship game from the year before, which was incredible, especially because the regional final was on ESPN and the national championship game had been on ABC. Then we go to the Final Four. It was UConn, Iowa, and South Carolina, NC State, both record-setting viewership, at least the UConn, Iowa was. And then the national championship, South Carolina, Iowa, was the most highly watched women's college basketball game ever. It outrated the men's national championship game. People are really watching women's basketball at the moment.
It was highly watched and possibly the most watched highly, just given the marijuana
laws.
The
legality of things these days. So it was just a couple weekends of incredible exposure for the sport. A lot of that, of course, driven by Caitlin Clark in Iowa. But there's great basketball being played in the women's game, and there has been for a while, and people are kind of catching on to that. And then earlier this week, I was in Brooklyn for the WNBA draft, which had 2.5 million viewers. And the fascinating thing about this is I think our previous high rating for a WNBA draft was around 500,000. So this was 2.5 million, and it outrated any game we've ever shown on any WNBA game we've ever shown on ABC, ESPN, or ESPN2. It did not. The highest rated WNBA game ever was actually on NBC, I believe, one of the first couple of years of the league. So it did not outrate that game, but outrated every game, every WNBA game we've ever had on the ESPN family of networks. So anyway, it's a really exciting time. A couple weeks from now, WNBA season gets started. And
you came home from calling the final. I think the next day you were in the grocery store and somebody asked you if you had said Caitlin Clark was not the GOAT or something, and you replied,
"I said I think that's such a stupid argument. The whole GOAT conversation is a stupid conversation."
And she said something like, "Well, you're never going to live that down."
Right. It's my fault. I typically if I
don't be lured into the GOAT inanity.
Of course. Normally, when I join something on ESPN that's outside of our women's basketball coverage, it's like a SportsCenter hit, and those are usually, you know, pretty fact-based, just talking about teams or players. And I think I was on Get Up, and the conversation came up about Caitlin and potentially being the GOAT, and instead of not answering, I answered, and have gotten, you know, some interesting feedback for that. And then
I would just say to people that for most of the history of basketball, the first 100 years anyway, if you had been taking 35-foot shots that counted for the same number of points as a layup, you probably wouldn't have been playing a lot.
Right.
So it's the GOAT arguments for that reason are inane.
Well, and the GOAT arguments are silly for a lot of reasons. I mean, and this is what I had gotten roped into when I was asked about it, because it was brought up in the context of championships.
And you were roped into the GOAT rodeo?
Yes. So I just talked about, you know, players who have had multiple championships. Breanna Stewart with 4, Diana Taurasi with 3, Candace Parker with 2, blah, blah, blah. Now, has anyone ever in the history of the women's game brought more attention to the game, brought more viewers, brought more ticket buyers than Caitlin Clark? Of course not. Such an obvious fact, and her importance to the game is massive.
Of course, she's one of the greatest players ever. She's an incredible shooter, incredible passer. You have nothing but praise for her.
Of course.
But the lady at the grocery understood that to be you were not impressed or something?
Right. And that's something that I will never live down. I just, It was.
I think you had lived it down by the time you had scanned your next item.
But you know what was super interesting though? Like earlier in that, so I think this was on Tuesday because Monday night was the men's championship and the UConn men won the national championship. And living here in Connecticut, I get asked quite frequently when I'm at the grocery store about UConn and the UConn women all throughout the course of the season, even in the off season. How are the women going to be this coming year? So that Tuesday, the day after the men win the national championship, one person there talked to me briefly about the UConn men, and multiple people, including the woman when I was checking the groceries, checking out, brought up Caitlin Clark, not the UConn women, not South Carolina. They brought up Caitlin Clark in Iowa, multiple people. And I was like, wow, the day after the UConn men win the national championship, this is what people want to talk to me about. And it's sort of a reflection of where we are right now in terms of the popularity of both games and how much is driven by the interest in women's basketball. I think it's incredible the attention that women's basketball is getting now, women's college basketball. Hopefully it also translates to the WNBA. But one of the things that cracks me up about it, and I'm saying this in the way of like, welcome to all the new WNBA fans, welcome to all the women's college basketball fans. I'm not one of those people who is like, we actually...
Where were you before? I know exactly what you're saying. There was a lot of that.
I saw it's weird. A sweatshirt that said, you know, for all, and it had like the, you know, 10 million on the sleeve, because that's what the championship game got last year, like the number. And then on it, I forget what the message was, you know, to all the people watching women's basketball now, and it ended with, I told you so. I'm not an I told you so. I am a welcome. This is awesome. Like, it's so great that people are coming to the sport. But it is kind of funny to see, like, there's the new shiny object, and right, whatever I know about it is all there is to be known about this new shiny object. And but it's so great and long overdue, and hopefully it continues in whether it's this summer or next women's college season, because and it's of course all about the women on the court. It's all about the coaches on the sidelines. Like, they're the ones who deserve all of the attention that they're getting. And it really is thrilling to finally see this. And now upcoming, and hopefully we'll get back to our regularly scheduled weekly podcasts, but we've got a big weekend coming up. We've got our youngest, who's in eighth grade, her school play, which last year we talked about her play and how much we loved it. I cannot wait to see her play this coming weekend.
Newsies,
yep. Our son has his confirmation, which is also a big deal. And lots of big milestones. Our second oldest chose where she's going to college, which had been a bit of a stressful situation for you more than anyone else in the house. I think the whole time she kind of knew in the back of her mind where she was going. I wasn't all that stressed about it, but you were a little bit. That has been decided, and yeah.
Well, let's continue this conversation while we peruse viewer mail, just because we have so much of it to get through.
4 weeks of a swollen inbox.
I'm not going anywhere near that.
I know you aren't.
Bait that hook, throw our lure, reel us in with your viewer mail.
A quick note for Rebecca, writes Mary from East Hampton, our resident Husky Eagle. On the last podcast, you mentioned not always knowing what time it was back home. The good news is that your phone and Apple Watch both have world clock functionality in the clock app. You can see and save multiple time zones. The same is true for the weather app. You can see and save multiple locations. When traveling, you can know the weather and time back home. Enjoy.
I knew that about the weather. I did not know about the world clock.
Interestingly, I didn't know that. I didn't. It was never a problem for me to know what time it is where I am. But in the weather app, I've maxed out with my number of locations, and it's interesting to me which locations I have in here. Some of them are obvious, locally, New York and Boston. But some of them are places that, you know,
you've been once.
Once years ago, I have the weather. I can tell you right now, looking at my app, it's 53 degrees in Bayeux in Normandy, France.
How many years ago were you there?
We were there in 2019 And but I, you know, I, until a better city comes along, I'm going to
leave that in.
Keep
there.
It in there.
Yeah.
So
is it rainy, by the way?
Not in Normandy. It's not. It's a sunny day.
Okay.
Dear Stephen and Rebecca, I'm neither a this comes from Deborah, D-E-B-R-A. I'm neither a completionist nor originalist. These are like Supreme Court justices.
Right.
Nor a strict constructionalist. But a long-time
constructionist.
Listener, yes, but a long-time listener, plus a weekly fan of Sports Illustrated's Air and Space back in the day. After 30 years of living in a two-story house, my husband and I moved into a one-story house last summer. You can imagine the plethora of things that we threw out or just moved and said we'll deal with later. Imagine my joy at finding my Xerox copy of My Big Fat Sports Wedding, which still warms my heart every time I read it. Well, thank you, Deborah. There were also a few saved articles of yours and Rick Riley's that were torn out of the magazine. They made the move to the new house. Well, I'm flattered. I appreciate that. Regarding the discussion of basketball towns, I present for your consideration, Rebecca, Dayton, Ohio.
Ah.
A, even though we have no professional teams, Dayton has been touted by many as the most passionate basketball town. And indeed, here is a video clip in which that is Dayton's described from a first four game as the most passionate basketball town. Two, a more objective fact-filled article states, despite having a population of just over 137,000, Dayton has actually hosted more NCAA tournament games than any city, with 133. The NCAA chose correctly when selecting its host for the first four. Also, Dayton, also known as the epicenter of college basketball, is known for bringing a great atmosphere to the first four and other tournament games. Three, you can buy T-shirts that say Basketball Town with the University of Dayton logo. It's on a T-shirt. So it must be true. And indeed, there is the Dayton Flyers logo. I don't know if either of you have been to our fair city, but the invitation is always open. I have been to Dayton, but I haven't been to Dayton in 20 years.
I was in Dayton as a sideline reporter covering the women's tournament. I don't remember if it was the first couple of rounds. I think it was a regional. And it, I think, was Pat Summitt's last year. No, I think it was her second to last year coaching. Anyway, I just remember covering the women's tournament in Dayton.
And this is from Debbie, spelled the standard way. Tip City. Now, talk about a great basketball town name. Tip, T-I-P-P, Tip City, Ohio, north of Dayton.
That is a great name. Tamika Jeter, formerly Tamika Williams, who played at UConn with Sue Bird and Swin Cash and those guys, part of that great class of 2002, is now the head coach for the Dayton women's basketball team.
Our next viewer mail comes from, remember our discussion some podcasts ago about Ed period Weinberger? A producer of,
yes,
or director of various TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Ed period Morales, a Connecticut Yankee in Western Pennsylvania. So I think this is what prompted that.
Yes.
This is the Ed dot that prompted that. Hello again from Western PA, Pennsylvania, writes Ed. Just a quick note to give kudos, to Denny for inserting the music from the NFL draft after your discussion of match day. It did not go unnoticed. Mr. Gallagher, thanks again for your podcast.
I heard that because that was part of the podcast I listened to.
When our niece matched on match day, yes.
Yes, and it was, anyway, it was spectacular. Well done, Denny.
Because we had been liking it to being drafted
yes.
in the NFL. Denny,
yes.
always spot on. Steve L. from Minnesota writes, Dear Restiva, greetings from another Steve from Minnesota, Chaska, who also happens to favor the offerings of White Castle. Let me start with how I found you. I've always been an avid reader of one of your contributions to Sports Illustrated. While reading an article just before COVID-19, the pandemic hit, there was a tagline indicating a new book. Once COVID was destined to keep me homebound, I secured a copy of Knights in White Castle, which just so happened to mention the podcast. What a wonderful way to have kept a positive perspective during COVID-19. Thank you so much. Having listened dutifully for the past 5 years now, just a few more to go, and I will reach that coveted completionist status, and I hope we've given them time to catch up over the last month, Rebecca.
Yeah, certainly have given time.
We've been a service to our
That's
listeners
right. it was,
by not
yes.
putting out podcasts.
Yes.
They probably would like more of that.
Yeah, probably.
I've listened to Rebecca and paid much closer attention to women's basketball. We're so lucky to have great media coverage and a fan base of the Lynx, and I've been to a number of their games once they start playing again. Your passion and insights for the game are infectious, and I enjoy listening to call games as I learn so much more. just what we were talking about, Rebecca, new people coming to the game. And I just saw, maybe it was from the draft, some other interview on Instagram, I think I saw it, Caitlin Clark saying, you know, she should probably stop saying how much she loved the Lynx growing up. Did you see that?
I haven't seen that, no.
She said something about, you know, I grew up, you know, loving the Lynx. I should probably stop saying that now, which is hilarious. I noticed you spent a great deal of time talking about D1 teams, and rightly so. They're worthy accomplishments. How about some love for D2 and D3? Our son went to Mankato State, and just this weekend, their women's and men's teams won titles in basketball, only the second time in NCAA D2 history as the same school won in men's and women's.
Incredible.
Incredible. We do spend time, I guess, not on the podcast, talking about D2 and D3.
Some great D3 men's and women's teams all over New England.
Yeah, especially around here. I know the Trinity men's team was great this year. The Amherst team is always, teams are always very good. The NESCAC.
Yeah, the NESCAC is outstanding basketball conference.
Congratulations to Mankato State. One more b-ball question for Rebecca. Why are basketball announcers on the floor and not up in the rafters like other sports? Well, in some places, they are in the rafters. Duke comes to mind, right, Rebecca?
Oh, yeah, that's such a tough place to call a game from because of that.
But I agree with him. And first of all, I wonder how long they will continue. And I know they're not always courtside. Particularly visiting announcers that say in the NBA have been moved
national
back
for national broadcasts, the announcers are still mid-court.
And I know the officials can come to the table, and you can, you know, all of that stuff is important. But it seems to me that just as a person who attends a lot of basketball games, sitting on the floor is not the best perspective for the game. I know you have monitors, obviously, but
We have monitors. It is the best place for us because you try to sort of split time between watching the game on the monitor and watching it like with your eyes, and that's the best way to be able to do that end to end. The officials do come over and need to communicate with you sometimes, and you just see and sometimes hear things that you wouldn't otherwise if you were any farther away. So it is an ideal place to call the game from.
And of course, print journalists used to be courtside in the NBA and then were moved to the rafters or other places in the corners, and although in college it still seems like they often have press tables around the
but the colleges, because when I was at UConn, the whole sideline, the entire sideline was set up for media, and now just
set up
a very
for high
small
rollers.
Amount of it is
everywhere.
Because it's they can sell those as courtside seats.
As an industrial and organizational psychologist by education and trade, we determine people's unique and individual characteristics and capabilities, and then within organizations do the same for the job and seek out the best matches between the two. For example, Steve is going to be much better at writing than home repairs. Perhaps, writes Steve L., you need a resident IO psychologist to keep track of all the resident experts you have. I think that's not only
of course we
to
do.
Keep track, but an industrial and organizational psychologist could perhaps determine whether some of our resident experts would be better suited to home repairs than, say, eye surgery. I don't know.
Which Ralph should be driving us? Which Ralph should be teaching us how to cycle?
Steve L's first job as our resident IO psychologist could be maximizing our Ralphs.
Yes.
Our Ralph's efficiency ratio.
Yes, then certainly needs to be maximized.
too many Ralphs, you know, in one area. Too many Ralphs in the kitchen.
Could be, yeah.
We may need a Ralph in the laundry room, for instance.
That's also what we were talking about on our last podcast, because we were coming off our daughter and your illness.
Oh, yes. So too many Ralphs, exactly. Yes. And some of them in the kitchen, I think.
Yes.
Happy March Madness, writes Deb. This is obviously sent while March Madness was still going on. First, congratulations to your daughter and her team for their second state championship. Thank you, Deb, and to her for being selected to play in the Senior All-Star Game. Well, thank you. I'm happy to see she ended her high school career so successfully. Also, praying for your youngest Russian speedy and full recovery from her injury. So this is as if she was writing in while we were recording this.
Right.
She knew before, most of you did, our daughter has had a full and fairly speedy recovery.
Yes.
She didn't think it was very speedy.
No, she did not.
But it seems speedy to us, not having to wear the sling and all that. Two, Rebecca, thank you for being the only, all caps, one of your ESPN colleagues to choose UConn women to advance to the Final Four. Because Gino is the ultimate mastermind at tournament time, yet no talk of him as coach of the year. Thankfully, Ice and Q played to their strengths when we were again faced with foul trouble.
I will say, early March, I think it was like March 3rd, we did a college game day at Iowa. And I picked to go to the Final Four. This is before the brackets were out. I picked South Carolina, which everybody picks South Carolina, LSU, Iowa. I was the only one to pick Iowa. And UConn, and I was the only one to pick UConn. And I was also somewhat ridiculed by folks in our production meeting because I had UConn on the list, and then I didn't have any Pac-12 teams on my list.
And then when UConn made the Final Four, that production team came to you and said, "Oh, Rebecca, we're sorry that we ridiculed you. You were right, and we were wrong."
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're right or not.
Or did that? The whole meeting never happened.
It never existed. Yes. because I watch UConn a lot, of course, especially living in Connecticut, and I watched Iowa a lot, and I've been doing this a long time. So I did think those teams had the pieces to get there. And I do think if LSU was in a different region, if they weren't in the same region as Iowa, they too would have gotten there. But, you know, she mentions Gino here. Gino not only didn't win Coach of the Year this year, but when the Naismith, they start with 50 names, then 25 names, and then a top 15. Gino was not one of the top 15 finalists for National Coach of the Year.
Did I see that they are naming the award for him?
That's a different one. Okay. That's the basketball writers are naming the Coach of the Year award for him, which is well-deserved. But it was funny because Coach actually talked to us about that a little bit at the Final Four. He said, I think he's won Naismith Coach of the Year 6 times. It was probably the 6 times his teams went undefeated. And he was saying, like, the years when it's easy because you have all this incredible talent are the years you win National Coach of the Year. And then a year like this year where you have to change your roster many times and completely how the way you play. After they lose at Texas, he just changes. He puts Paige Beckers at the four and they just change the way they play. And brings them, helps them improve to the point they get to the Final Four. Like, he certainly should have been one of the finalists for National Coach of the Year this year.
Three, one of my teammates, this is from Deb, one of my teammates gave you a business card for the Connecticut Senior Women's Basketball League.
Yes.
I think we mentioned that on the podcast,
still in my
right?
jeans pocket. I wore those jeans the other day, and the card was in the back pocket.
We're a diverse group of basketball-loving women, ranging in age from mid-40s through our eldest at age 87.
Amazing.
We play a 3-on-3 half-court format. The state tournaments are played in specific age groups, but our weekly practices, Friday mornings in Wyndham, are mixed and so much fun. We're looking forward to playing in the CT Games this May, which will qualify us to play in the 2025 National Senior Games in Des Moines. We'd absolutely love to have you and any of your teammates join us. We're looking forward to a weekend full of men's and women's Husky hoops. This was sent April 2nd. Especially enjoy you, Ryan and Holly, as my favorite broadcast team. As always, thanks for your entertaining podcasts.
Gosh, the last time I played like 3-on-3 basketball, do you remember this? It was you, me, our son, one of his buddies. There were two other people we went to their high school and the boys were going to shoot around and we just ended up playing 3-on-3. Do you remember this at all? The boys were probably in sixth grade.
I kind of do, actually.
And it was so much fun and my body just can't let me do it anymore. Just twisting in like the smallest ways makes my two-time surgically repaired knee swell. And that day, I just remember thinking, gosh, this is so fun. I wish I could do this still. Kind of took it for granted when I was healthy.
Geraldine writes, "Hi, Rebecca and Steve. I enjoy when there is a crossover between two of my favorite podcasts. Rebecca was featured in a quiz question on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me this week. I won't mention why so as not to stir up more controversy." I think I know why.
Was it Albany related, do you think?
I'm guessing it was Albany related.
Should we address the Albany thing or just let it go?
No, it's been addressed multiple. Some people may not know what happened.
We were in Albany. We're calling the LSU-Iowa game. Ryan Rucco, our play-by-play guy, mentions how Caitlin Clark, hadn't been really seeing her family much, told them she was going to just stay in her room and focus on the games and go out and find fun stuff to do in Albany. This is on the free throw. And I made a joke, good luck finding something to do in Albany. It was a silly little joke. Harm intended.
Completely in the context of the conversation. It wasn't some contrived pot shot.
Yes, it was just like...
It was a spontaneous pot shot.
But it was meant to be lighthearted.
Lighthearted entertainment.
I have spent many weekends in the Albany area coaching our kids' AAU teams, having a blast.
And in your airtight defense...
Yes.
You are from Southwick, Massachusetts.
Correct.
You live in a town between Hartford, Connecticut, and Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yes.
Having nothing to do is your favorite thing.
It's my utopia.
You've chosen a life of having nothing to do.
That's right. Like, there's nothing that excites me more.
Than
nothing to do. And anyway.
Not that there's nothing to do in Albany. There's plenty to do in Albany.
Of course. I'm sure there is.
There's just nothing to do where we live.
Right. Which is my preferred method of living. And anyway, I had gotten off of X, Twitter, whatever, not looking at mentions at all. And I'm glad I did, because I had been the next day, I think it was the next day, maybe 2 days later, I'm getting a bunch of texts from people saying, you know, don't worry about what they're saying about you, the kind of a text. And I'm like, well, I don't know what they're saying about me, because I'm not seeking it out on social media. But anyway, apparently I was getting killed for joking around about the fair city of Albany.
And everybody you heard from personally said those people were correct. They love Albany.
Yes, people love Albany.
Hello, BNC, writes Sue. We all know that Rebecca has been featured in various New York Times crossword puzzles, but could this be the first time she's made the news on Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR news quiz? Here is a link to the spot where the question featuring her is asked, so we can listen to that, Rebecca, later.
We'll listen to that afterwards, yeah.
But it sounds like it's an Albany reference.
Perhaps.
Wishing Rebecca an easy transition into everyday life after the tournament. Steve, I'm sure you've done an admirable job holding down the fort. Well, what would you say? Did I do an admirable job holding down the fort, or did the fort hold down me, Rebecca?
I think both things are probably true. I think you held down the fort.
Until the fort held me down.
The fort held you down, yes.
It was a stalemate.
Yes.
The battle between the fort and me. Congratulations, writes another Steve. This is we've had multiple Ralphs.
No, we have multiple Steves.
Multiple Steves, yeah.
Multiple Ralphs just sounds much better than multiple Steves.
I know, but I think the Earth is heading for a cataclysmic showdown between Ralphs and Steves.
Perhaps it is.
That'll be the final ball and chain. It'll be ball and chain 278 : Ralphs versus Steves.
Yeah, well, we need to find an original, because Ralphs versus Steves would be a better sequel to whatever the original is going to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's...
Anyway,
I'm not suggesting that the various Steves we've mentioned today have anything against the various Ralphs.
Or vice versa.
Even, honestly, the Ralphs themselves may not get along with one another. We could have
true.
Intra-Ralph warfare.
Intra-Ralph rivalry?
Yes. I'm sorry, Steve.
Into rivalry?
Steve from Wisconsin writes, congratulations to Rebecca and Ryan on calling a wonderful tournament. It was an absolute pleasure to listen to them, and the games were great. Two questions. One, is it in Rebecca's contract that Ryan must use Hall of Famer as an introduction? No, it's in Rebecca's contract that Ryan must use Hall of Famer as an introduction.
The whole thing started as a joke before I was in the Hall of Fame. Someone else who was in the Hall of Fame and who demanded that anytime that person was calling a game, their play-by-play person had to introduce them as Hall of Fame. And so when I went in the Hall of Fame, Ryan was aware of that. And so it started as a joke, and now it kind of has just stuck as his way of introducing me. But there is, like, sometimes I'll still laugh about it as we're coming on air, because... ultimately, it started as a joke, and now it sort of still has an element of that.
And though you're calling a basketball game, people naturally assume he's referring to the Basketball Hall of Fame, but he doesn't specify.
That's true. It could be the Mom Hall of Fame.
Which you're not in.
Which I'm not in.
It's located in Albany, by the way. And two, did Rebecca suggest to Ian Eagle to use Bouncy Castle? Rebecca, you and I both heard that.
Yes, we did.
Was that in the men's championship game?
It
probably
was in the
because
men's
we wouldn't have been together otherwise.
But.
And you said when he mentioned, he was mentioned Castle of UConn.
Steph Castle, yeah.
And perfectly, he described him as a bouncy castle.
Yes.
And you.
I perked up right away.
Perked
I said,
up,
oh,
barely
he
paying
used
attention.
Bouncy
you said,
castles
did he just say bouncy
before
castle?
Before I had a chance to. I don't think he'll use that again because he was only talking about that one specific player.
And Steve says he snuck that in early in the second half in the men's championship. Of course, it's easier to work in when a player has the last name of Castle. Keep up the great work.
It's still ours, though. It's still mine. I will use it at some point.
Thank you, Steve. Rebecca, I this is our third viewer mail from Deb or Debbie. This
or
is a
Deborah.
Different Debbie. This is Debbie in Morgan Hill, California.
Wow.
So I think we're going to have a tripartite Armageddon in which Ralph's, Steve's, and Debbie's fight for world domination.
Your money's on Debbie's, yes.
Well, in that case, perhaps Steve's and Ralph's need to form a coalition of Stalves or Reeves.
I might need their dimensions, though. I need to know if they're little Debbie's, if they're snack cakes, or if they're big Debbie's.
Debbie writes, I listen to your podcast on repeat and have for years since the beginning, actually, during the night in my sleep or lack of sound sleep. TMI, I know. No, we asked for that, right?
You do have sort of a soothing voice in on the podcast in a way that you might not necessarily in person.
I do?
Yeah. Yeah, you have a soothing voice, and one of the reasons it's soothing is because it the volume and intensity doesn't fluctuate when we're doing the podcast. When we're doing the podcast, generally have the tone that you had with my father when you asked him to move a chair down.
When I said to your father, excuse me, good sir, would it inconvenience you if you rose from your seat, moved down one seat, and sat back down?
Yes. No.
I recently heard the bit where you couldn't get your grill to fire up with the igniter. The above link, there's a YouTube link, might help. A simple battery change. Don't feel bad. No one knows this hack. Well, I'm going to watch that immediately.
That would be amazing if it works.
There's a battery in the igniter, I guess.
But I don't think it's the igniter that's the problem, because you've used the flame, like you've used the match, and it didn't help. Our bigger issue is getting the gas somehow is not making its way from the container to the grill.
Nevertheless, in the number of years we've owned that grill,
we still didn't know
we weren't aware
of
there's a battery.
Yes, I bet most listeners are unaware of that.
I bet most listeners are, because they're not us. But I'm going to hook up a Sears diehard to that bad
that's
boy
true.
To make sure that we never.
I don't even think that Sears still sells diehards. Is Sears still
Sears
exists?
Sears doesn't exist. Therefore, they may no longer be selling as many diehards as
they
once
used
did.
To? Yes.
Also on my gas grill, there is a small hole on the right side where I can turn the propane gas tank on and turn on a temp control dial and place a lighter stick inside the side hole, and it bypasses the igniter. I can light it with the butane gas log type lighter tool such as this one.
Yes.
And there's a link. We have done that. And then I always kind of plug my ears and turn away as if Wile E. Coyote
flame.
Who has just lit a pyramid, a pyramid of TNT sticks.
Yeah.
That have TNT written on the side of it. Although he would usually do the plunger.
I think so,
When blowing up a wood box with TNT written on it. Then he would depress the plunger and blow himself to kablooey.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Hope this helps. It does help. It should be BBQ season soon enough in your area. As I'd hope snow would have stopped by now. Well, Debbie, let me tell you what I did, how I fixed our four-burner grill.
Which is how Steve fixes most things.
Thank you for these tips. They can still come in handy, but I fixed our grill.
Bye.
I resent our IO psychologist saying that I would be better suited for writing than household tasks, because I fixed our grill. Our four-burner grill now works as a stand to hold our one-burner grill that I assembled.
Like a camping /
tailgating grill. I got a tailgating grill that has the little Coleman screw-on propane tanks. And And much the way that my mom used when my dad got her a treadmill, so she didn't have to drive across town to go to the gym, which was,
of course, her social
and mental health way to get out of the house.
Yeah.
She used that treadmill as a coat rack. Well, now I use our four burner grill as a grill stand for our tailgating grill.
At some point, I will go to our local hardware store and ask them for a name of somebody who can repair a grill.
I miss your podcasts, writes Debbie. I understand it's an effort to do them, and this is Rebecca's busy season. WNBA draft is in 2 days, as she writes this. I so appreciate no commercials, but with the explosion of podcasts that have taken over since you began yours, and I'm sure many do them to bring in sponsorship money, I'm sorry for you that you don't have this benefit slash income. Well, that was
a choice.
That was a choice, yeah. The choice being that I didn't really want to do ad reads for.
Yeah.
Various things, but we enjoy income as much as the next person, don't we, Rebecca?
Sure.
And I was heartbroken, Debbie writes, and still am, about the loss of DGS. I'm still in mourning. Your youngest was the 7-year-old when you began. Look at her now. You're in the thick of it with your kiddos and all the things they're involved with. 5 years from now, you will look back and wondering how you did it all, and you will miss it. I speak from experience. All the best always, Debbie from Morgan Hill, California. Thank you, Debbie. We think about that all the time.
Yes.
Time is flying by.
Too fast.
Way too fast. And we're conscious all the time that way too soon we'll be looking on these years of total chaos and
missing them. I mean, I was thinking about it when I was with our daughter at the campus. Our second oldest, our senior in high school, on her accepted Students Day campus visit, and just thinking it's not that many months away. We're going to have two in college and two in high school. And one of our kids in high school next fall will be more than halfway through. Our oldest will be more than halfway through college. Like, the whole thing is just churning so quickly. Too quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Gail from parentheses now, Sugarland writes, Rebecca and Steve, we have had a very busy end of winter spring. I will hashtag enumeration nation them below. Ready, Rebecca?
I'm ready.
One, we bought a house about 20 minutes down the road. Of course, this meant that I had to clean out the fridge and freezer.
Ooh, expiration dates?
I would like to report I moved 0 of our expired salad dressings or condiments from the old house to the new house.
Ooh, well done.
You have to move house to get rid of your expired condiments, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do.
The third grader cleaned out the pantry and did a very thorough job. I do not know how I managed the good luck to clean out the fridge and freezer on garbage day, but I doubt my luck will ever be as good again. Of course, that's when we have our weekly reckonings with expiration dates. Mm-hmm. Now is on trash day.
The last when month, housed, somewhere in the last month, I did clean out our pantry, and now some of the pull out drawers that were jam packed with things piled on top of others. There's actually open space.
Primary,
to put new
secondary,
food.
And tertiary pantries.
And I was able to organize it. Like, we've got like the taco and Mexican food and on one part of one drawer. We've got the pasta and stuff on another drawer. Like, it's really quite.
I like at the grocery.
Quite pleasant
at the grocery. That's international foods. The international foods aisle. So I can find what I can find: soy sauce, taco shells, and pasta in that aisle. It doesn't seem to always kind of, it's one aisle for the rest of the world.
Yeah, you think it should be more?
Well, I think it's kind of arrogant for the grocery to think that 95% of what's in there is somehow kind of American foods, you know?
And the beauty of that is 99% is stuff that's not good for you at all.
Right, and the other,
the other 1% is international foods that we have changed enough to also make them not good for you.
But international foods doesn't even have its own aisle. Do you mean to tell me that the world's contribution to cuisine fits on one side of one aisle?
Right.
Of a 20-aisle grocery store?
But you can give an entire aisle to just sugared cereals.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not. We can have both, but
the international area could probably expand.
And I think muesli is in that cereal aisle, and it's clearly not an American food.
Okay.
Häagen-Dazs? Do they still make Häagen-Dazs?
They do, and it's not in either of those aisles.
Frusenglaja, do they still make that?
I don't know.
I don't think they've made that since like 1979. It was a thing that was advertised on TV for a while when I was a kid. I think it was a competitor to Häagen-Dazs.
Frusenglaja. It was an actual thing.
Frusenglaja. Why do I remember that?
Frusenglaja.
Frusenglaja. I'm going to Google it when we're done here.
Was there an umlaut over the U?
There were multiple like heavy metal umlauts, I think, strewn about. It was probably made by Quaker Oats or something.
Okay.
You brought something home the other day from the grocery. Yeah, you brought home our daughter for her role in Newsies needed like stockings, like nylons, right?
Yes.
And so you brought home, to my unbelievable disappointment, you brought home, it had a little hang tag on it, legs, L'EGGS, right?
Yes, yes.
But they don't come in an egg anymore.
No.
When did they stop hatching?
Oh, it's been a really long time since you could hatch your nylons. It was fascinating because our daughter said for her costume, she needed nylons. Well, nobody wears nylons anymore. So anyway, I get the nylons and I'm teaching her how to like put on nylons and how you kind of scrunch the whole thing together so that you don't end up pulling it and ripping it and whatever. And it made me think back when I was at UConn, anytime we went to a banquet or anywhere that was nice and we had to wear a skirt or a dress, Chris Daly, CD, one of her rules was that we had to wear stockings. We had to wear nylons. There was no getting past it. Do we have to wear nylons? Yes, you have to wear nylons. And then I don't know how many years after I graduated, the players were so excited because she finally changed the rule because nobody at that point was wearing nylons except like people who are currently my age and or my current age then, I suppose. So they didn't have to wear nylons anymore. And it was this huge victory. And I texted her after the draft because I was thinking about it because teaching our daughter how to put the nylons on for her costume. And I said to CD, you know, you used to make us wear nylons, and now, like, all these women at the draft have at least one, if not multiple, personal stylists who are dressing them. And CD responded, yes, I was the team's stylist before they knew what that was.
Frusenglaja had an umlaut over the A in Glaja.
Aren't there more than one A in Glaja?
Frusenglaja, with an acute accent. Frusenglaja, this is Wikipedia, was a company that made premium ice cream for the American market, founded in 1980 by Richard E. Smith. Although the ice cream was made in the U.S., it used a quasi-Swedish name. Frusenglaja, without the acute accent, is Swedish for frozen happiness. One of the chapters of this Wikipedia entry is conflict with Häagen-Dazs. Sued unsuccessfully in 1980 to stop Frusenglaja from using a, quote, Scandinavian marketing theme. Eventually, it was acquired by Kraft Foods and then Unilever. So, exactly as we would have assumed, but this confirms it.
I appreciate that. I don't remember ever having Frusenglaja on my awareness meter.
Well, I never ate it.
But you were aware of it.
Well,
I don't think I'd ever heard of it. Yeah.
2, broken collarbones and barf buckets. Glory, that's a lot. I hope her road to recovery is smooth. It has already reached its conclusion. Kudos to you both for raising a daughter who isn't slowed down by a lot of pain. Kudos to her for reminding us all that being with our friends, even at school, is the best medicine. We had our very own week of barf buckets. This resulted in the fourth grader asking just this week, did the Super Bowl happen? Yes, it did, buddy, but you were sleeping feverishly on the couch with the barf bucket and missed the whole thing. That's great. That is, I mean, this happened to you when you came back from the Final Four. You slept most of the day Monday, and then you said,
I was sick.
Took the kids out to dinner so that you could sleep and not feel like you needed to make dinner. I was going to make dinner, but I just decided to take them out to dinner. There were only two of the kids home anyway. And you said, I can sleep now and then wake up for the 9:20 tip-off of the men's NCAA championship. You slept through the first half.
Almost. I woke up latter part of the first half. But I came home sick from the Final Four.
3, thanks to Dr. Susie for her allergy medicine reminder. I got us all on our meds in time for Texas spring. My parents come from Michigan to stay with us for the winter. No, pro-retirement tip. There is no need to buy a second home if your kids move south. But I forced them to leave by March 1st as my dad is highly allergic to everything that grows. And in fact, our daughter at college, didn't she call last night about...
She had to go to the infirmary because she was having some issues. And
New York City is particularly brutal.
When I lived seasonal allergies,
near Central Park, it was as bad or worse than living here in the woods in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Four. This was the first NCAA tournament in years that my husband and I failed to fill out a bracket, but we definitely enjoyed the many close games while regrouting, painting, cleaning, packing, and unpacking. I hope everyone has an enjoyable and healthy spring. Gail from now, Sugarland.
Where is Sugarland?
Florida?
Texas.
Wait, have you not been listening to?
No, I was listening. And then I must have zoned out.
Well, Dad
when
comes
Texas.
Down.
Yeah.
And he has to leave before the Texas spring.
South.
Because
oh, got it. Texas spring. Okay.
And just Sugarland, Texas
of
is
course,
a well-known.
Of course, of course.
P.S. A few weeks ago, I listened to the ESPN Daily podcast on Max Verstappen in DGS's memory. Still lots of love for DGS here. And with that in mind, we're going to have Carol close us out here on Viewer Mail in the Dr. Siegel cleanup spot. Hi, Rebecca and Steve, writes Carol. I am absolutely heartbroken to hear of Gary's death. I was one of his, quote, thick file patients, meaning I began seeing him as my GYN when I was in my early 20s and continued to see him well into my 50s. He delivered both of my boys and never failed to ask me how they were doing whenever I came in for an appointment. He also let me call him Gary instead of Dr. Siegel because he was a genuine, down-to-earth human. I thought of him as a friend, even though I only saw him periodically. Funny story. I live on a street called Gannett Nook, G-A-N-N-E-T-T. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I think I'm pronouncing Nook correctly.
Mm-hmm. Gannett or Gannett?
Well,
yeah.
Gannett is the newspaper chain, so that's mm-hmm. why I'm. When Gary saw my address, he asked if it was a long street because he had four other patients who lived on the same street. Gannett Nook only has six homes. His reputation as an excellent OBGYN was well known.
Wow.
That's like the OBGYN equivalent, Rebecca, of guys who mow grass
right.
in Connecticut. They often
right.
lock down a whole street because
right.
you've got this zero radius mower on the back of the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get most bang for your buck if you do this yard and the one next to it and the
right.
one next to that
mm-hmm.
all at the same time. I mean, I'm not comparing the two. Arts,
you're
but,
just making
but,
a
right.
somewhat equivalent, see?
Carol writes, I met Sweet Beth during one of his stints as a solo practitioner between partners when she would accompany him during examinations. My heart breaks for her. I always asked how she, Amanda, and Eric were doing, and he would light up whenever he spoke of his family. He was so proud of them all. I often thought of him after he retired and wondered how he was doing. He was a special doctor who, I believe, cared deeply for his patients. I am fortunate to have known him and to call him my doctor. The reason I'm emailing you is I would love for you to pass my condolences on to Beth and the family. I don't know how to reach them, but I want them to know how much I admired and respected Gary. He was truly a special person. Regards, Carol White. Carol, thank you.
What a perfect cleanup spot email this week.
Beautiful email, beautifully said, and we'll pass this along to the Siegels. Dr. Siegel continues to be a presence on the podcast, and that makes me happy.
Me too.
That's about it, Rebecca. We've gone way too long. And
we have.
So let's turn this over to producer Denny Gallagher.
Thank you so much, Denny. Tom DeCari, play us out.
Saying says no pain, no gain, and we found that to be fact. The road might twist and turn a bit, but we all arrive intact. Mr. Mom and Mrs. Dad having each other's back. Day by day, just to keep it sane, who's the ball and who's the chain? It's hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane. Six of us and a family pet live in a cuckoo nest. Daily grind puts your sanity to a daily test. Androgynous, ambiguous, what we give for a little rest. Stay by day just to keep it sane. Who's the ball and who's the chain? It's hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane. It's hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane. Hard to tell right here on Happiness Lane.